actions, because even though the simplest way of meditating is sitting down and doing absolutely nothing, I call that the Rolls-Royce way of meditation. But a lot of people, when they sit down, they don't do nothing. They start thinking of all sorts of ridiculous things, fantasies, dreams, plans, writing their biography, even though they're only 18 years of age. Whatever it is, just thinking a lot. So, it's helpful to actually to give a little bit more instructions. And I tell even the monks over at Bodhinyana, in the beginning of the path of meditation, it doesn't really matter if you give a few instructions, a nudge here, a bit of a choice over there. The real important time to let go 100% and just sit there and don't give any orders is when you get very deep in meditation. Because then any order, any choice, any decision just makes waves on the lakes and stops you progressing. But at the beginning, it's not so important. So when you, especially when you sit down to meditate, the first thing to do is, of course, look after your body to make sure it is comfortable. Because if your body is in pain, it's very difficult to be calm and peaceful, unless you know you've really practiced a lot. But most people, they're in pain, and then they have to scratch this, they have to move that, they have to cough, they have to swallow their saliva, and it's endless the things you have to do. So, we look after our body first of all. And look after the body, make sure you've got enough cushions underneath, make sure you have enough blankets, but not too many blankets. Apparently some people were cold this morning because there wasn't enough blankets. I think one person must have had seven of them or something, I don't know. But if you haven't got enough blankets, no matter what you do, you feel cold. Please remember one of the great stories I heard from the Tibetan Vajrayana tradition. Because in that country, they used to like going on retreats as well. And they'd find caves somewhere in the Tibetan plateau. And those caves had no central heating. They had no fires, there was no wood. They had to somehow learn how to endure the cold. And so what they did, they trained and trained and trained until, and this was in the monastery, until they were giving their test. And the test they had to fulfill was to go out in the middle of winter in the snowfields of Tibet. And they had to sit all night next to a lake without any robes on. Now that was cold, with the wind whistling over the snowfields and the ice, in the middle of night time, and they just sat there. However, they were allowed one blanket, which had to be dipped in the icy waters of the lake first. And they would have to dry three blankets in one night to pass the test. And if they can do that, then they could go off and stay in a cave by themselves. They knew how to endure the cold. And they never died. And in fact, somebody was telling me, you know, that someone get this documentary for me. They had these hypnotist documentaries. I'm always interested in hypnotism because it shows you something, what happens with the mind. And they hypnotized this guy, apparently, he's just had bathing trunks on, to go into this big vat of ice water. Now, really, it's 0 degrees. But they hypnotized him to say this is like a hot bath. And so he went in there and said, oh, this is really nice. Oh, yes, I can take this all day. And it was ice water. And they had some sort of stuff on his body. His body was reacting. He was, reacting to the cold. But he thought it was just so warm and so nice and so wonderful. And so he survived, okay. So if you are really cold in the morning, just hypnotize yourself. This is back in Singapore in the hot. And you won't feel the cold anymore. Which is one of the reasons why Cold and heat, a lot of times it is really in your mind. It's cold. And if you say it's cold, you feel cold and you really get cold. If you feel it's warm, it really is warm and you get warm. It's one of the reasons because really Perth isn't that cold, but when it gets to January, February, sometimes we get temperatures up into 40 degrees and people feel really hot. And I tell all the Buddhists, look, be compassionate to other people. Please never say, oh, it's hot today. Just say it's a nice day today. And just that, just is putting the idea in people's minds that hot is not bad, it's just nice. Just putting the idea in your head that cold is not bad, it's okay. That's all really you need to do. But once you start thinking about cold, then you start worrying about cold, and no matter how many blankets, jumpers and stuff you put on you, it's still cold. So be careful just the way the mind works. And this is one way that you can develop some insight into this monastery, into your life. If you are really cold, just think heat, think warmth. It's warm, it's warm, it's warm. This is nice. If that doesn't work, always remember this. Cold is good for your health. It is. If it's cold, you have a longer life. Which is why we put milk and butter into the refrigerator. We freeze it, and then it lasts a long time. So if you're cold, think, great, I'm going to last a long time. I'm being preserved. So just changing attitudes really helps. And if it's really hot, because sometimes it really is hot. And so if it's really hot, it's just a perception, that's all. Your body will survive somehow. And that was our practice in Thailand with Ajahn Chah the first year I was there, in the hot season. Now, it was only got into the 30s, mid-30s maybe in northeast Thailand, which is so far away from the seas, it gets extreme temperatures. And so it got really, really hot there in the summertime. And it was also, it was very humid in the jungle, so very oppressive. So what Ajahn Chah used to do, after our one meal of the day, we had to eat a lot. And if you eat just one meal a day, sometimes you do feel tired afterwards, you want to take a nap. But we weren't allowed to take a nap. We had to go into what used to be the old ceremonial hall, which was just a 4 brick walls and a low metal roof. The old corrugated iron, maybe about 2 meters above the floor. And we had to sit there in the middle of the day after lunch for 2 hours meditating. And we had to bring all our robes and wear them all. And a few crazy monks brought their blanket as well. And it was like a sauna. From that day on, I never liked saunas. And when some of the Anagarikas or monks said, why don't we build a sauna in Janagra, in monastery, I say, no way, not after that experience. And you had to meditate there for 2 hours. And it was really unpleasant, really hot and sweating. And sleepy because it's the middle of the day, but certainly after those experiences, you never complain about the heat ever again. And I did read in the Straits Times on one of the flights, even the Singapore government were complaining about young men these days because you have to do your national service. And when your national service, you have to be in a tent in some jungle somewhere. And all these young men on national service say, where's the aircon? It's in a tent. They don't have air cons in the tent in the jungle. And they're getting quite soft. So sometimes it's nice just to toughen up a little bit, be able to have a little bit of endurance, because you find it's not that cold you're going to die. It's not that hot you're going to dehydrate and collapse. It's a pretty average in this place. So you are fine. So don't think heat, don't think cold. If you can do something about it, fine. If you can't, just let it go. And when you can do things like that, it means your body can be quite comfortable. Same like a lot of aches and pains. A lot of aches and pains, it's just, there's nothing really there. It's just you're a bit sort of restless. I've noticed that sometimes you start to look for something to disturb you.
Hey, how are you going over there? Nothing happening? That's no good. What about my tummy? Oh yeah, my tummy's hungry. Or I ate too much. Leave it alone. So that way your body can relax and be peaceful. But when it comes to sitting down, you can get cushions, you can get... Is anyone using any of these stools? Dania, could you get one of those little Zen stools out to show people? Because they're really, really helpful. This is... many people who have bad knees wear these. Yeah, come up to the front here. And my assistant now will demonstrate the use of the Zen stool. Very good. You need one. So you put it down and see how she uses it. She puts her legs underneath and her bottom on top. Crack. No, it didn't crack. And that's how you do it. It takes a lot of the pressure off your knees and it's really, really comfortable to sit on.
And there's different sizes.
Different sizes, big sizes, up sizes, down sizes. And you can put a little blanket or cushion on the top there if you want to raise yourself so it's very nice and comfy. And a big round of applause for my sister. Thank you. Sorry? They're portable, yeah. Sometimes people have those and they can actually fold them up and take them wherever they go. So try those if you're uncomfortable on the floor. Where you put your legs, I don't care, as long as they're happy. And during the meditation, sometimes you might get an ache or pain somewhere. If it's an ache or a pain, what I usually do the first time I have an ache or pain, I just ignore it because sometimes it is just restlessness and it just goes away. If it comes up again the second time, I usually still ignore it. The third time it comes up, because you always do things three times in Buddhism, you know, Buddham, Dhammang, Sanghang. You know, the three refuges, the three sort of characteristics of existence, whatever. So, third time, then I do something about it. So, you know, usually put my attention there and try and just even calm it down, just with your mind. And big. A monk for 40 years now, you know, I can actually do that. You could have an ache or a pain, put your mind down there and just relax it. Relax it. Because you'll find a lot of aches and pains, instead of relaxing it, we actually make it worse by being afraid of it. We squash it up and make it more intense. But if you go in there, go to the center and expand it from the middle. When you expand it, it doesn't sort of spread all over your body. It actually gets diluted. The more you spread out the ache, pain, or irritation, the more dilute it becomes until it doesn't can't feel it anymore. That's a beautiful way of dealing with that. And of course, you all know one of my stories. The last time I really had difficulty, pain, a couple of years ago, with stomach poisoning, food poisoning rather. We call that in monastic life occupational hazard because we don't know what we're eating sometimes. Sometimes people put out, sometimes they put a little label on it, know what it is. But, you know, sometimes it's not really what it's supposed to be. Like once, you know, I went over to Toronto, and they knew that I couldn't take Sri Lankan food because that really does my stomach in. And so they said, we made you shepherd's pie. If you know what shepherd's pie is, an English dish, you know, it's mashed potatoes on the top and some sort of... meat on the bottom or something. Some of you can have a vegetarian shepherd's pie. But I thought, oh, great, shepherd's pie, I can eat that. And so when I got underneath the mashed potato, it was Sri Lankan curry underneath. Oh, and it was too late at that time. Always in my bowl. So we have occupational hazards sometimes of, you know, being a monk. So you don't know really what you're eating. So you just know, hope for the best. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And this time it didn't, and I had food poisoning. And that really hurts. You know, your tummy cramps up. And you know, you kind of help yourself. Ooh! Fortunately, I was in my cave, so no one could hear me. But, you know, I was really cramping up, and it was very, very unpleasant, very painful. And usually, you know, like most people, you know what to do, but you forget what you're supposed to do. But every now and again, when I get into trouble, I say, what would I tell other people to do? Because, you know, otherwise you're just a hypocrite. And it's okay teaching, but if you can't do it yourself, what's the point? So then I thought, well, what would I tell others to do? Go inside of it, and give it this beautiful loving kindness. Open the door of my heart totally to this pain. And just, I'm not joking, it was incredible, just the result of that. 20 minutes, I think, 20 or 40 minutes, somewhere around there, I forget which. That's all it took. And it was absolutely 100% totally gone after 20, 40 minutes. I forget, was it 20 minutes or 40 minutes? I did write about it somewhere. I think it was 20 minutes, it wasn't that long. So, and it just totally vanished. And there was real food poisoning with the cramps and incredible pain. And then it suddenly just, not suddenly, but just gradually over 20 minutes, just faded away into nothing. And that gave me, again, a lot of confidence to know how to deal with pains in the body. A lot of times the pain is the body overreacting to some sort of bugs or whatever else in the system. And you can actually interfere with it by going against this overreacting, which is a lot of inflammation, and just softening it up until it vanishes completely, totally. And of course we teach that. There's one of our ex-monks, and he got married, and his wife just had a baby. He came to show it to me a week or two ago, and saying, oh, how did the birth go? And because he was an ex-monk and she's been a disciple for years and years and years and years, that she said it was amazing. Just that while they're going through the contractions, you know, the husband said, just watch your breath, let it go, be kind, open the door of your heart. He knows all the teachings. It's just incredible how it works. You know, just no pain at all, a very, very comfortable delivery. This is really, really great stuff which you're learning. And it's not just how you meditate, you can deal with all sorts of stuff in life. You know, by learning how just to calm the mind down. And the pains vanish. But usually, if there's something you can do, then do it. You know, because don't just sit there while you're having your leg amputated and say, I'm opening the door of my heart. You won't be able to do it, it's too much for you. So don't really go over the top. If you've got an ache, three times, you know, just, or two times, you know, the third time go towards it. And then, you know, you try and soften it. And the thought might come up, oh, I can't stand this any longer, I've got to move. Just resist that, carry on. Oh, this really is hurting. Resist it twice, but the third time, you can move. And it doesn't take 1 second, 2 seconds, you change your posture of your legs, or, you know, you scratch your head, and then it's gone. And then you can carry on meditating. What happens is that because you move, you know, your progress in meditation, you regress, you go back a little bit. But, you know, another couple of minutes, you're back where you started from, and then you can go deeper because you've got no pain. It is worth it, just to sort of move every now and again. But if you're always moving and always restless, you can't get still, then there's obviously something wrong there. You should resist a little bit and learn just how to, you know, just to let these things go. And your body becomes fine. People always say about these health benefits of meditation, and there's huge health benefits of meditation. And knowing that, you can let your body alone, and it just heals itself. It gets very healthy and very strong. There's so many cases in all the years I've taught meditation, when other people, there's that great case, I keep saying it because it was obvious to me. Sometimes people say they've got this disease inside of them, but you can't see it. But this was a case, a fellow had psoriasis. You know, extreme. He had the rash over his whole body, I mean, every part of it. And he showed it to me. You know, I could see it on his face. Actually, you know, he was actually wearing a rubber face mask. He was wearing this rubber face mask, you know, like some weirdo. He said, this is to stop me scratching. You know, skin off, because this psoriasis was all over him and it was driving him nuts. He opened up his shirt, you could see it all over his chest, lifted up his trousers, I could see it all down his legs. It was one of the grossest things I've ever seen. And I thought about it afterwards. I mean, that really is hard to endure because it's 24 hours a day. You know, if you go and get tortured by some of these extreme regimes, at least, you know, they don't do it 24 hours, they give you a break every now and again. But this is 24 hours, always there.
And like many people in that condition, you know, you go and see all the doctors, psychiatrists, and whatever you can. You're desperate. So I only came to my retreat out of desperation, just try anything once to try and get rid of this. But of course, you know, it was really amazing. It worked. He told me when he first came in, I don't know how long I can stay here. And if I leave, don't please take it personally. It's just I have this incredible, torturous itch all over me. And it's very hard to stay still anywhere. But he stayed the whole retreat. At the end of the retreat, he came to see me. He never came for an interview. Just waited till the end of the retreat. At the end of the retreat, he came with this huge smile on his clear face. No, and then he with a big grin, he opened up his shirt. And he lifted up his trousers, and there was a rash around his ankles. He said, this is all that's left. Maybe an inch, couple of inches ring around his ankles. He said, many other people will be really upset about this. For me, this is nothing. Nothing. Thank you. And I know that when those things happen, and you take a person out of a torture chamber of their body and give you some freedom, oh, that just really feels good. You've actually really helped somebody, big time. Just one person, incredible thing. And all it was this meditation. You know, he learned how just to relax to the max. He had to do it much more than any of you will do it, because he had to. The motivation was just really so intense to do something. So he really let go and relaxed. His body healed itself. Now I mention that to you because that's one example out of hundreds, and also personal ones. Don't be afraid that if you meditate that something will go wrong with your body. Well, everything goes right with your body. Aches and pains which have been there for years, they vanish. Simply because the body needs you to get out of the way, to relax, and then it can heal itself. Just on that, there's many times when people get into some nice meditation, they get hot spots in their body. And I love those hot spots because I know, great, you come and say, oh, I was meditating and my back was just really hot. You know, well, my tummy is like a little fever just down there. And I know now, just from experience, that is some healing going on. I don't know why that is. Maybe you don't know you've got something wrong down there, but the body does. And suddenly, you know, it starts to get very warm and very hot. You haven't got a clue why. But once sort of you finish your meditation, the heat dissipates, you feel so good down there. So relaxed. And aches and pains which have been down there for years are no longer there. Classic tale, lady had whiplash in the car. Her shoulders were always tense, and she could never relax them because there was an injury. And she meditated, all her shoulder and neck got really hot. She didn't know what it was at first. She said, what's going on here? It's really hot, like a fever, but it's just that one part of my body. And that's when I said, when did you have your whiplash? I never told you that. I always thought you had psychic powers, Ajahn Brahm. Now I know, personally. I never told you that. And said, it was just, you know, just being logical, that's all, not sort of psychic powers. Just, I know that's the most common injury to the neck and the shoulders. And so that's your injury, just being healed. You probably feel really better than you've felt for weeks before. Yeah, months. So this is great stuff when you meditate. And the only reason I say this is to give you confidence. Just leave your body alone. It knows how to look after itself. In fact, it does a much better job than you can ever do, if you can just get out of the way. So you put your body in a nice, comfortable position, and you leave it alone to look after itself. And then you can start working on your mind, your mental world. Sometimes people, when they first ask, how do you meditate? And if I say that it's focusing, if it's concentrating, it gives people the wrong attitude. And they work really hard. You know, you're already stressed out in your work. I'm stressed out being an abbot. I don't want to stress out again when I'm meditating. This is free time. This is relaxation. Relaxation, that's the word I usually use when I first teach people meditation for the very, very first time. Relaxation. Do you know how to relax your body? How do you relax your body? You know, you try and do something like sitting down comfortably, leaning back, pulling your legs out.
And you can feel like muscles which have been held tight loosen off. Tight balls of pain just expand. You're relaxing. And you get what we call feedback. In other words, you can know whether the body is getting more tense or more loose. This is the job of mindfulness. Mindfulness is not just noting things or not just being in this moment. It also gives you feedback, which is its major function. You can see, just say, how the body is getting more tense or more relaxed. And once you apply your mindfulness that way, you start to see my body. You don't even need to ask or put it into words. Many of the physical feelings are actually very useful for mindfulness because it's hard to put them in words. We just do not have a language, for a headache. What type of headache is it? Well, it's just a headache, that's all. Well, what type? That's why I really feel for doctors when they try and ask you, what's going on? Well, it hurts. Yeah, but what hurts? Well, around here somewhere. But exactly where? I don't know. Well, it hurts, but describe it. It's painful. Yeah, but how is it painful? I don't know. You're the doctor. So we don't have a language for that. But we do know the different feelings. And the mindfulness means we do really become aware of the feelings in the body. And really importantly, we become aware how they change. And we start to realize what makes them change for the better, what makes them change for the worse. The feedback teaches us how to relax. If you are relaxing, the body starts to get really peaceful. It feels at ease. It has the delight of relaxation. Many people go to all these resorts and they go on these reclining these are called them deck chairs. What do they call these days? When I was a kid, you used to go to the beach, you called them deck chairs. But there's the reclining. I've seen when you go on these executive retreats, seen some of you meditating. At least I hope that's what you're doing on those reclining. you just lay back there in the sun, with your coconut juice next to you, and people pay a lot of money for that, and they call it, they're just relaxing. You don't need to waste so much funds. You can do it here much deeper, much better, and also just much cheaper as well. But why do they do that? Because relaxing is a great pleasure. And this is what we do with the body. We relax the body and it feels good. And because once you start to notice a delight in a relaxed body, you can relax it more. That's just over the last year when I was at Nolamara, I was teaching that because I was practicing it as well. When you relax, if you don't recognize how delightful it is, you stop there. But if you relax, I'm relaxed, this feels really good. And you go deeper in relaxation. Oh, this is really nice. And you go deeper. Everything just loosens up. So when you are sitting at the beginning, just use your mindfulness to see how relaxed you can become. You don't need to actually lean back. Even sitting up, this is quite a comfortable position for a human being. Or if you want to use those Zen stools or the chairs in the back there, it's really comfortable. People can fall asleep on those chairs like someone's doing now. So you fall asleep. But it doesn't really matter. At least then I know how to relax. I'd rather have someone falling asleep than someone being a control freak, always tense. So you feel your body relaxing, great. Take it deeper. And once you learn how to relax your body, that's a training which you then parlay over to relaxing the mind. You do exactly the same technique to relax the mind. Now you can feel your mind, the mental world, sometimes it's like the body, it's tense, it's got all these knots of pain. It's got all of these tensions inside of it. You know, you're like your mind being pulled by the past. You know, something which is worrying what someone did or said earlier today. You know, it's like a tension pulling you, stretching you. Or some fear of the future which is squashing you away from the future. There's pressure on your mental world, just like sometimes there's pressure on your body. And now we're learning how to relax the mental world in the same way. How do we do that? Again, it's just by learning how to use your mindfulness to give you feedback. How is your mental world right now? Is it relaxed? See if you can relax it a little bit more. So see if you just, you know, even say let go or calm or peace. What happens? Do you get more tense, more relaxed? And little by little, that feedback is how you train yourself to get more and more and more mentally relaxed. Now, again, I've used that, you know, for the body, taught it with the body. If you've got an ache or pain, you've got to relax it first of all, be kind to it. You know, my knees, they are aching, I just put my attention down and just relax it. Come on, relax it, expand the pain. And then it vanishes, it disappears, it's not there anymore. But I've got to relax it first of all, be kind to it. And that became the trick which I've been teaching very effectively to many people, how to let go of all your past and your future. Now we all know that I've been teaching this for, well, not me, the Buddha for years about mindfulness is always in the present moment. And people say, but how do you get into the present moment? Because there's so much of the past which is still bugging me. And there's all these fears of the future which is, you know, obsessing me. How do I let go of the past and the future? It's the same way you let go of the pains in your body. You're kind to them, first of all. You relax them, you soften them. So whatever's bugging you from the past, don't just try and throw it away. I am not going to think of that past. This retreat, Ajahn Brahm said, I should be in the present moment. I'm going to let it go. Come on, let it go. Go. I told you, go. Go. Go, 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 go. It doesn't go, does it? And that's because you're making it hard and more of a problem. So if a thought, experience in the past comes up, be kind to it. Relax it. So whoever did what to you, give them benefit of the doubt. They must have been in a bad mood that day. Maybe they were abused when they were kids themselves, and that's why they did it to me. Now maybe just they were in such a between a rock and a hard place, and I just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And this is what happened to me. Maybe they were just in a bad mood. Maybe they just made a mistake. So you soften the past. You soften yourself. You know, well, I did do something wrong. Well, maybe I was sick that day. I wasn't really thinking right. We always make mistakes. So you soften it, first of all. Just like you've got a pain in the body, you soften it with kindness until it becomes so soft, it's easy to let go of. You relax the past. The opposite of being relaxed the past is being tensed up about the past. Oh, I don't want to remember this anymore. I want it to go away. See, that's tightening up, that's tensing. Instead, we relax the past. And then it becomes so easy for it to disappear. The same with the future, all the fears which you have, the fears of dying, of the fears of getting the sack from work, the fears of having no income. Don't worry, you can always come here. We've got too much food. We can feed you. The fears of when I go back to Singapore, will my wife still accept me? All the fears which people have. How do you let go of those fears? By softening them. About what happened in the... So they become like these hard, the worst case scenarios which you always think about. So soften it. You say, we can't say the best case scenario. Have middle way scenarios. And give it a bit of positive spin. Yeah, I might get the sack, but who knows? When one door closes, another one opens. Sometimes two open. So, you know, you get the sack from work. You have all these opportunities, like the great Steve Jobs. When he got sacked, No, from, what was his company called? Apple. He started two more companies. And now that one of them became so successful that Apple bought it out, and on the condition they reappoint him. And he said he had a great time having been sacked. So, you know, he was a person who used being sacked for his advantage. So, who knows? And there's that other guy, he's over in Jakarta. You know, he was sacked too, at the point of a gun. A true story. If you think that you've got a boss from hell, you should go to see some of these bosses from hell in Jakarta. He called this guy into his office and said, I want you to resign. He said, why? And he got a gun out because of this. If you don't resign, I'll shoot you. And he meant it. I mean, some really, really rich guy. You can probably sort of get a lawyer, buy off the police, and just, you know, get it all covered up. So this poor guy had a wife, two young kids, you know, just probably big debt for his first house, had to get the sack. And, you know, he's told me the first week or two, you know, he was devastated, you know, just depressed, didn't know what to do, no one to complain to. And then he decided, you know, to, well, in that work, you know, he's made lots of contacts, he's got lots of experience, lots of knowledge. So he started a company in opposition to this guy. And he's highly successful, a millionaire. You know, he's going to stay at his mansion. He gets all these forest monks to go and stay at his mansion these days, just in Jakarta. Stayed there a couple of times. He's come here too. And, you know, he said it was the best thing happened to him. If his boss hadn't have sacked him, he'd have still been just working, you know, for this other guy, you know, surviving, but nowhere as successful as he is now. So this is a great little story, you know, that sometimes we sort of worry about the future, but instead of worrying about it, what do we say? Good? Bad? Who knows? And that way you're softening the future. You're not so afraid anymore, you're not worried anymore, because you don't know how it's going to turn out. Isn't that marvelous? The future doesn't scare you anymore, because good, bad, who knows? If you really understood that story and practiced it, in fact, it's even on some people's t-shirts. Jocelyn, see? Good, bad, who knows, t-shirt. If you can practice that a lot, you don't have fear for the future anymore. You don't know what's going to happen. So that's called softening the future and softening the past. And then you can let it go. But don't try and let it go until it's softened. Otherwise you can't relax it. It becomes too much control, too much force. And of course, what happens when you're away from the future and the past? You're here. In the beautiful present moment. You know, sometimes some people cannot distinguish between the letter L and the letter R when it's being pronounced. So sometimes by mistake they don't call it the present moment. They call it the pleasant moment. And it is perfectly okay by me to say that. So it's not just present moment awareness, but pleasant moment awareness. Because it is. You know, you're here in Jhana Grove. It doesn't get better than this. You know, well, maybe I'm a boss, but I'm not a boss from hell. I don't take out a gun and tell you, meditate, or else. It's so nice and pleasant here, and you've got your nice rooms. You can go to sleep whenever you want, you know, cups of tea. It's nice here, freedom. But no traffic jams. No noise. No husband. Oh, yes. No wife. Nag, 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 nag. Freedom. Woohoo. So it's a very nice place. You can appreciate this. So you're here. Be here. Every moment. And you find then you're really relaxed. People say that they go on these resorts to get away from it all.
What do they mean, get away from it all? What are they trying to get away from? All their worries, all the old memories, all the work they have to do. So you're allowed to get away from it all here. You don't have to do anything. No past, no future. All you have is right now. That by itself is called relaxation. You know, when they always send me these emails about mindfulness. And sometimes mindfulness makes me sick these days. Seeing all mindfulness is mindfulness that, mindfulness someone else. I know, whoever started all of this, I said to Angie, I'm going to sue them. Sue them for stealing the intellectual property rights of Buddhism. Because Buddhism invented mindfulness. You know, it's just like Microsoft has some operating system and Samsung steals it. And they wouldn't stand for that. So anyway, never mind. I haven't got a lawyer, can't afford one. But whatever. So I saw this email and said, they have 100 different definitions of mindfulness, but the latest one was like being in the present moment. Yeah, of course. And that's an important part of being mindful, being here. If you're thinking of the future, the past, you're not really mindful. So once you start being mindful, you can start to relax. That's why mindfulness is so popular now, because it does relax people. It begins the mental relaxation. You know, when you haven't got these big burdens of the past and burdens of the future bothering you. Even as a monk, I was really trying hard to do that. I was talking with, I think it was Danny a couple of days ago, that when after 7 years of being a monk, I went to visit my mother for the first time. And, you know, I was also there trying to clean up some of the old mess, you know, because when I first became a monk, I said, I'll be back in a year. Ha ha ha. So, you know, all male stuff. And so I saw the old degrees I had from Cambridge, the BA and MA. So I tore them up and put them in the bin. You know, what do you need those for? You're a monk. You know, we don't have status as a monk. You know, I never say Ajahn Brahm, M.A. I never say Lord Ajahn Brahm or whatever. So I didn't need it. So I just, you know, quite sort of naturally, because I was a monk getting rid of all my past, I just tore them up and put them in the bin. My mother saw it. She never batted an eyelid. But then sort of an hour later, I saw her at the kitchen table with all the pieces carefully arranged and taping them all back together again. I felt so bad. Because for a mother, you know, her son's degrees, it's really important. Not important for me. I was being so selfish. I didn't want these. But for my mother, those were really important. And I just passed throw it away. That's how I felt with the past. All these old photographs. The only reason why you see photographs in some of these books which people are printing about me these days is because my brother kept them. I don't know where he got them from. They're really embarrassing, some of those. Really long hair and a big beard. In those days, it was called the donut look. You know, where your hair stopped, your beard started. You can just see me peering through the centre of that. And when my mother said, get your hair cut, and I did, she said, that's not what I meant. But anyway, I was supposed to be talking about meditation. So letting go of past and future, being in the present moment, at least you can do it here while you're on retreat. You're retreating from the past and the future. And then you can really relax. And after a while, it feels so good, you don't really want to start thinking of the future and the past anymore. Every year I'm allowed to do a 15-day retreat in my cave. And I just finished it a couple of weeks ago. And it's really so hard. After 15 months of just doing absolutely nothing in your cave, just meditating, you come out and you have to talk to people. And, you know, it's like going from really cool into hot. And, you know, it's really tough for me to do that. You know you have to do it. But, you know, you're so calm and quiet. You know, you don't want to think. You know, everything is peaceful inside. Why disturb it? You know, because you have to, because you've got to do your job. It's even worse when I did my 6-month retreat.
6 months of just being by yourself, just meditating, no responsibilities, duties, nothing to do at all. Ah, what bliss. But when I came out and people asked me, how did you do? It's like a crazy guy. And I realized I had to talk quickly. So I remember really forcing my brain to think, you know, really putting pressure on it. And I had a headache for 3 days afterwards. Absolutely true, no exaggeration. 3 days I had this headache because I had to get my brain thinking again. It was so peaceful not to think. So even these days, when I don't have to, I won't. You're silent, you're peaceful, it's so wonderful. Inner silence, peace of mind. Why do you want to think anyway? It doesn't get you anywhere. It gets you more headaches. So can't you instead just enjoy and be peaceful? When people ask you, what do you think about that? Nothing. What's your opinion on the world economy? I haven't got one. Isn't that nice and peaceful? You don't have to worry because everyone else is doing that thinking for you. So, you know, you can do all the thinking for me about world economy and the situation in the Middle East and environmental problems. You can think that all out for me. And I'll just be peaceful. Many people volunteer to do all that thinking. So it's yours. You can think for me. Even though what I'm going to say when I'm talking, I don't know what I'm going to say. I make it up as I go along, as I always tell you. And that's an amazing thing, you know, that sometimes that, you know, you may have this, if I don't think and prepare, it will all go wrong. People worry like that. But, you know, I don't plan my talks, I don't think about them, and there's more and more people keep listening to me. I can't understand it. You go off to Sri Lanka and say, what are you going to talk about? I don't know. And there's 7,000 people, you know, listening to, you know, see what you don't know and you're talking about it. And I can't forget some of my great experiences being a monk in 40 years. It was in the Duxton Hotel over in Adelaide Terrace in Perth. I was invited to it was a local state government were getting members of the public and to consult with the general population about traffic issues. And I scored an invitation to this seminar. And I wasn't doing very much, so I'll go along to that. And you know, when they have these seminars in these hotels, like conferences, they always arrange lunch, you know, just afternoon when I can't eat. Really insensitive. So, you know, everyone else went off for lunch and I couldn't eat anything, it was afternoon, you know. So I was just hanging out, you know. If you don't eat as a monk, you don't want to see it. just Captain James there, that, you know, once, you know, I do have my favourite foods, and most of you know that now, so I don't mind saying it. That, you know, one of the foods which, you know, I have a lot these days because people know I like it, was this English dish, mushy peas. A special English dish from the north. And I've never seen that on Singapore Airlines at all, but I was coming back Cathay Pacific from Hong Kong. And, you know, sitting there in the economy class and just, you know, nothing to do. I looked at the menu and said, what have you got today? And you got pie and mushy peas. I said, oh, no. What time is it? Can I? And it was way in the afternoon. There's no way I could stretch, you know, try to find some loophole somewhere. No way. That's okay, I'm used to that. But the person sitting next to me, you know, there's choices in these menus. The person sitting next to me, that's what they ordered. Yeah. And you try not to look at it, but you smell it and you see it. And it's really good quality, mushy peas. Torture. So if you are a monk and you can't eat in the afternoon, you don't want to see it, okay? But, you know, nowhere else to go. You're in the sort of the aircraft and squashed up. You go couldn't do anything else. So anyway, so that's why, you know, it's better not to see it, you know, than actually see it. What was I talking about? Oh yeah, not planning, that's right. And so, you see, I don't plan to talk. So there I was over in Duxton Hotel, hanging out, not going into the dining room area in case, you know, it started torturing me. And so this guy came up to me and he said, oh, you know, I'm doing interviews for this magazine. So what magazine is it? It's Shipping. And I want an interview about shipping issues. I'm a Buddhist monk, okay? As science, I know it's still about theoretical physics, still know that, but shipping issues. But, you know, just please in life, if people ask you to do something you've never done before and it's really, you know, out of left field, do it. It's good fun. I say, okay, yeah, what do you want to know about shipping? And they asked all these questions, and I literally didn't make it up as I go along. I don't know anything about shipping. I gave all these answers. And I thought, that's a good waste of time. So, you know, other people having lunch, I was actually doing something. I never saw the guy again. 3 months later, he came to see me, and he said, that was an amazing interview. And I said, really? What happened? He said, it was syndicated into every major shipping magazine in the world. You know, not just his. They picked up on that and they wanted to reprint it all over the world, translate it too. And he said, I got so many emails back from all these experts on shipping asking me, who is this Ajahn Brahm? Who is he? And he said, he certainly knows what he's talking about. And I did not know what I'm talking about. I'm still going away with it. That's what happens when you live in the present moment. You have no fear, and it's amazing what you can get away with. And you're having so much fun doing it. And sometimes you wonder why were the answers just so to the point and so wise. Just recently got a email from, it was the Netherlands, from a big university over there. And they say in the philosophy department in the Netherlands, some university, I forget which it was, they all listen to my talks. And they say, you are so intelligent, you are a great philosopher. We just got this philosopher over from the United States. It cost €1 million to get him. You know, basically like transferring soccer players. And he said, €1 million it costs us to get this, and you're far better. And I thought of sending an email back. Well, you know, a transfer fee can be arranged for the Buddhist. €1 million, you know, I'll give half to the BF. And what do I know about philosophy? Being in the present moment. There, you know, you have all the wisdom and understanding you need. All the joy and happiness you need. Because this is where life is happening. If you spend a lot of time in the present moment, you can understand everything that needs to be understood about shipping. About philosophy. Because this is where life is happening. And when people are so much in the past and the future, they're not alive, they're not living. They're off somewhere else. So they don't accumulate experience, knowledge, wisdom. They don't know kindness because they're never here to experience kindness or practice it. So one of the reasons why the present moment awareness is so powerful. And if that's all you do in this retreat, brilliant. You'll be so happy and so wise. So just for the first day, the mindfulness of just being here. So when you say, how do you do walking meditation? Be in the present moment. What's happening right now? What foot is moving? What toe is moving? What part of your foot lifts off the ground first? What part last? When you're walking from here to the dining room, just feel in the moment yourself walking, you're alive. It may be cold, but feel what cold is like. Cold is actually not bad. You say, no, I don't want to be cold. That's when you give it sort of a bad rap. You know, it's wet. Feel the rain. It's beautiful when it's raining. Just be here as much as you possibly can. And nature is always bringing you back into this moment. A bird starts calling in the morning. It brings you into this moment.
You know, you're sitting here, you can feel your butt on the cushion. You can listen to the sound of the cough. Be here. And when you are here, you are creating a lot of happiness, a lot of wisdom, and the foundation for very, very deep mindfulness. No past, no future. It's all you ever have is right now. And a lot of meditation is just refining that. Refining the present moment, going deeper and deeper into it. So say yesterday, I was saying, if you want to be peaceful, enlightened, sort of, just for this retreat, no wanting anything. In the present moment, you can't want for anything. To want, you have to have some perception of the future. To attain, you have to have some idea of a goal in the future you want to reach. If all you have is now, all you have is now, there's no place to go, there's nothing to achieve. All you have is what you have, right now. And quite frankly, that's all you ever need. You're fulfilled, satisfied, just being here. But if you lose the perception of the present moment, and all sorts of desires for something in the future, all sorts of ill will for what someone did this morning, all of that just floods into the mind, and you've lost your happiness. So refining present moment awareness, until there's not even a moment to go, no perception of that at all. Even what's going to happen next, even just a moment from now, that vanishes too. All you have a right, bang, straight, dead in the center of now. That's why I often noticed, in the center of now, is this big O, this big zero. N-O-W. In the center is a zero. And in the center of the zero, in the O, there's nothing. So, that is the word now, brilliant word. Center of zero, and the center of the zero, space, nothing there at all. So that's how we get right there into the now. And you'll find you get silent, you can't think in the present moment. Nothing to think about. All thinking is about the past or the future or some fantasy somewhere else. Right now, what's there to think about? Nothing. So that's the first part of meditation, present moment awareness, which relaxes your body, relaxes the mind, and you have a wonderful time. It's easy. So people say, yeah, Ajahn Brahm, but what do I do? Oh, come on. Doing is what you're doing next. Where I want to be. What direction do I have to walk to get somewhere? Can we get that out of the head? It's not a doing retreat. It's not trying to go somewhere, it's being here, being in this moment, as much as you possibly can. Have a cup of tea, enjoy the tea. Every sip of it, that tastes nice. Because the taste of the tea is only in the present moment. But how many times you're drinking a cup of tea and you're thinking, oh yeah, when I get back to Singapore, you're not even tasting the tea. It's a total waste of time. So even when you're eating, are people keeping noble silence at lunchtime? Please do that, because I know that eating is, you know, for most people, is a social event. And you feel that if you don't talk to someone, you know, it's not really the full having a meal. But here in monasteries and Jhana Grove, meals in silence. You can then taste so much more of the food. How can you be aware of the flavour of the food if you're busy talking about the soccer to the person sitting next to you? You know, you're focusing on the football or the accounts or you're doing something. You're not really eating. Which is one of the reasons why I advise people. If you do go out to a restaurant at night, maybe with your boyfriend, with your partner, or whatever, if you go out to an expensive restaurant, please tell your girlfriend, shut up. I paid a lot of money for this food and I want to enjoy it. If I want to talk to you, we'll go out to McDonald's or some other cheap stuff. And I don't even... but I'm here for the food, okay?
It costs a lot of money. Otherwise, you know, you're totally wasting your time. I remember, Angie, you took me once, we had this lunch, I think, with somebody from the Straits Times. You wanted to impress him. And you took me to this, was it 50th, 60th floor restaurant?
Equinox.
That was it, was it?
Equinox.
Yeah, and I didn't even have the time to eat, really, because they were talking to me all the time. And I don't know, what I did put in my mouth, I didn't taste it at all, because I was always chatting. And it's incredibly expensive. And what a waste of money that was. Maybe to impress somebody, it didn't impress me. In fact, I was hungry afterwards.